Quorum being present only 35 minutes after the House adjourned, and we were scheduled to meet immediately. I'll call the Energy, Finance, and Policy Division to order. First order of business would be approval of the minutes of March 25th. Chair would entertain a motion to that effect. Representative Gunther moves approval of minutes from March 25th. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of their adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Those minutes are adopted. And members, we also have minutes from March 26th that if someone would be so kind to move approval. Representative Magnus moves approval of minutes of March 26th. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of their adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Those minutes are adopted. Members, first up on the agenda today is House File 1836, Representative Sertich. Representative Sertich, Chair will move House File 1836 for possible inclusion in the in the Energy Policy Omnibus Bill. That's a tongue twister for me. And I believe, Representative Sertich, you have an amendment that I understand would get the bill in the order in which you wish to have it discussed. I will move that amendment. Members, that is H-1836-DE1 amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Sertich, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I bring before you a bill that deals with the Laurentian Energy Authority, which is a biomass project between a joint project, actually, of sharing of services between the Virginia PUC and the Hibbing PUC. Members, House File 1836 will direct Minnesota PUC to approve an amendment purchase agreement between the Laurentian Energy Authority and Xcel Energy to add a fuel adjustment clause for its biomass renewable energy project. As a result of negotiations between the parties, the LEA, the Laurentian Energy Authority, and Xcel Energy, we have this delete all amendment that partially compensates the Laurentian Energy Authority for higher fuel costs without mandating a fuel adjustment clause. This amendment is supported by all the parties. Xcel Energy is in the room as well if needed. And it's also been included in the Senate Omnibus Energy Bill, Mr. Chair. And the overall purpose of this amendment to this bill, and this bill now is in its form, is to compensate the Laurentian Energy Authority fairly compared with all other biomass electrical power producers in Minnesota. Mr. Chair, that's the bill in a nutshell, and I have Mr. Leone from the Virginia PUC here to answer any questions the committee would have.
Mr. Leone, welcome to the committee. Did you wish to testify, or are you just answering questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm just here to answer questions.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Leone, I've got a few questions. I believe that you were in front of this committee, or actually the Regulated Industries Committee, in either 2005 or 2006, looking at, I think it was March 26, 2006, talking about this project, and I've got some questions about how it's worked out and hasn't worked out, and why we're here again. And first of all, it's a little bit, I've got conflicting information. Is it one plant, or are there two different plants that are working now?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is two operating plants, one in Virginia.
Mr. Leone, I neglected earlier to ask you to please identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry, Terry Leone, General Manager of the Virginia Public Utility and Treasurer of the Laurentian Energy Authority.
Please proceed.
Again, the representative, two plants, one in Hibbing, one in Virginia.
Thank you. I didn't say.
It's not a hobby.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, Mr. Leone, since this plants have been going, what has it done? Have there been benefits? Has it added jobs? Has it done everything that we were hoping it would do at the time?
Mr.
Chair, Representative, your memory is correct. It was 2005 when we were before you. And yes, this project has achieved all of the goals that it set out to do. Hibbing and Virginia are two communities that are combined heat and power communities. What we did is we saved our district steam heating systems. We kept or retained 75 employees in each of the two communities. In addition to that, we estimate we have created an additional 35 to 40 new jobs in the logging industry.
Representative Hoppe?
Thank you. I think that's the extent of my questions for Mr. Leone.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Forgive my voice. Members of Bill, also gives district heat as well as electricity. It also helps Xcel Energy meet its biomass requirement. And on top of that, it prevents forest fires because by draining the undergrowth out, there's less chance of having fires up there. And I hear it gets hot enough up there without fires.
Mr. Chair, at least on the Representative Recovina's side. Mr. Chair and members, you know, President Gunther said he'd be advocating to be my voice on this committee for this meeting, and he goes and loses it on me. So it's the last time I asked President Gunther to be my voice on behalf of a
president. I thought, Representative, we were listening to Smokey the Bear there for a minute.
Representative Hoppe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair and members, and this might be funny with Smokey the Bear and all that, and maybe there are some that think it's funny, but again, we pointed this out last week, Xcel Energy might be fine with it, it might be helping them meet their mandate, but who's paying for it? The ratepayers. I mean, this is just one more thing. Our ratepayers are paying for this, the customers, and we just pass it along, and this is one more thing that we're piling on, and we pass, every bill we're looking at today is one mandate, one kind of mandate or another, all passed on to the ratepayers. Ultimately, people are paying. So I understand that it's important to prevent forest fires. I understand that it's important to prevent forest fires, but ultimately I think we should remember that the ratepayers have to pay for that.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hoppe, there are things that cost a lot more than this. I remember a year before this was passed, we passed a bill that burned turkey litter, and that cost significantly more, and the ratepayers are paying for that. And this is such, at 35 megawatts, this is such an insignificant percentage of the Xcel Energy's portfolio of producing power that I doubt if you'd see it on your bill.
Mr. Chair, to that point, Representative Gunther, you could say that, but it's one insignificant thing after another. It's mandate after mandate after mandate. We had the testimony last week. I don't remember if you were here, but I believe that the Xcel ratepayers in my district got something in their bill saying that the rates were going to go up a little over 8% because of those insignificant little mandates that we keep piling on. And this might be a good project, and I'm sure it's going to pass out of this committee, but we all need to keep in mind that insignificant or not, they all add up, and we're not paying for it. Our ratepayers are. Xcel just passes it right on.
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, a few questions. Might have missed this if they did a thorough introduction, but maybe to the witness. Can you tell me, is this the same proposal that Representative Rukavina came for to burn the kind of the underbrush and some scrub brush? Is that what we're dealing with? And can you tell me exactly what the purpose of meeting the bill is today?
Mr. Leone.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, back in 2005 I appeared before a committee with Representative Rukavina. And this is, we actually burn what's called forest harvest residue. It's the tops and the limbs that are left over from the round block that goes to the traditional pulp or paper industries. And we burn that residue in a wood-fired boiler. The second part of your question, the reason for this piece of legislation is that we are one of the three named projects in the 1994 Prairie Island legislation. And as we ultimately became aware of this project and bought into it in 2005, we had no ability to negotiate a fuel adjustment or a pass-through mechanism for increased fuel costs. And so what we laid out with Xcel Energy was a path by which we could recover some of those costs. The amendment that's presented here today is a compromise to a fuel adjustment cost where we would look at raising the fixed price of the biomass. Again, even by raising the fixed price of the biomass, it would still be at a lower price than any of the other two projects prescribed by legislation. So what we're really asking for here is some fairness.
Mm-hmm. Weston?
Mr. Chair, I'm venturing out. I'd like if the committee would know what kind of prices we're talking here, and do the other two that you refer to have an escalation clause coming, or do we give them the same opportunity? And are you burning? I'll ask a couple questions here together. Are you burning the same type of brush? What you just described to me doesn't seem to match what I recall was told to the committee 3 or 4 years ago with what kind of brush you were burning. But is that the same stuff as you were intending 4 years ago?
Mr. Leone?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. We may have talked at that time about brush land. The development of creating or harvesting brushlands, mm-hmm, for the creation of additional wildlife habitat. However, our primary objective at that time was the forest harvest residue, which are the tops and the limbs we're talking about.
Mr. Chair, is that all you burn? Have you burn any other source of fuel? Coal, gas, nothing else gets burnt in this?
Mr. Leone.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we do in fact burn coal. We are a fossil fuel coal burning facility, and over the 20-year life of this project, the power purchase agreement we have with Xcel, we are actually coal up here, biomass here. We are raising that mix of biomass in the project, so we're over the average life of the project, we will be burning 75% biomass and 25% fossil fuel as prescribed by the legislation and by the PPA.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Weston.
Do you just get a prorated amount for your energy then that's biomass? How do you calculate what percentage is valued as biomass or renewable type energy, and what does the coal get paid at a different rate or counted differently?
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is an average overall price for the 35 megawatts of electricity that we generate on a daily basis. The contract calls for 35 megawatts per day on an 86% capacity level, which means 86% of the time during any year we need to produce the 35 megawatts. It is the coal and the biomass are part of a mix that makes up the percentages that creates that renewable electricity that's going to excel. Today, we're burning more coal than we are biomass, but we are ramping up those percentages over the 20-year average life. And again, we are burning biomass and keep track of that on a monthly basis and provide that information to all parties.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Weston.
So if I understand, 35 megawatts is the capacity of the plant, and you're counting that towards the biomass. If I recall the legislation, and maybe Excel can come up here and clarify this if you don't know the answer, I thought it was supposed to be 35 megawatts of woody biomass. Have we deviated from that, or is the plant actually 50 or 60, 70 megawatts in capacity, and by the time we count the portion of biomass, we get 35 megawatts? Can you clarify that for me?
Mr. Leone.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're absolutely correct. There are two plants, one in Hibbing, one in Virginia. Combined, we have the ability to generate close to 60 megawatts of electrical generation. Our contract or PPA with Xcel is for 35 megawatts. The steam that is produced, the station power or the house power that's produced, is all produced by the coal. And that by legislation and that by the PPA is allowed. So So we take that net electrical generation, and that the majority of that, and in today's percentages, it's 35% biomass going to that electrical generation and 65% coal. By the end of this contract, by the end of the 20 years, we're 2 years into it, that percentage overall on the average will be 75% biomass and 25% fossil fuel, i.e. coal.
Last question.
Representative Weston.
Mr. Chair, the actually, I just forgot what I was going to ask. Go on, Mr. Carroll. Think about
it. Representative Weston, we have Representative Beard on the list. If it comes to you, we'll recognize you next. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Leone, I got two questions about the fuel clause adjustment you're asking for, which I think this bill is enabling, or maybe even Representative Sturdy. Does that allow it to go up and down? How often does that adjust?
Mr. Leone.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually what the amendment does is it strikes the fuel adjustment mechanism and it sets a fixed price for the fuel over the term of the PPA.
Mr. Chair, that's
Representative Beard.
New question. So we've got 18 years then at 104, I think I saw here. Is that what I'm seeing? And Mr. Chair, I think I misunderstood the bill, or did this amendment change the bill, Representative Sturdy? Did we originally had a fuel clause adjustment built in that was not there when you took over this project that was mandated from a previous legislature. So the amendment now is actually setting a fixed cost and not allowing the cost to float. Am I understanding that correctly?
Mr. Leone,
Mr. Chair, Representative, in a compromise or in negotiations with Excel, due to some accounting regulations that Excel had, they viewed that this mechanism that's before you today, the amendment, mm-hmm. was a better mechanism for them on an accounting basis to be used in that, and we acquiesced to that position. Mm-hmm. The current price, the current average price is $102.85.
Yes.
What we're asking to go to is $104.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm choking all of a sudden here and on this new fact. This is why we have committee meetings, to talk these things through. Which fuel source is driving the cost? Is it the tree trimming because the lumber industry is down right now, or are fuel coal contracts driving it up? What is it that's giving us heartburn on this besides, what is it that's driving the need for this bill? Let me put it that way.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you hit the nail right on the head. The downturn in the housing industry has caused the logging community not to harvest the roundwood.
Yeah.
So getting the forest harvest residue, or for us to go out and pay the higher stumpage fee for roundwood, which is allowed under legislation under unmerchantable species and the like, we now are paying that higher stumpage fee for the fuel, or for the biomass fuel. And in addition to that, when diesel fuel costs now just coming down off of $4 per gallon, the logging industry is primarily driven by diesel fuel. So that is a big part of the angst that we are going through with our pricing.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, thank you to the witness. I feel compelled to ask a couple of questions of somebody from Excel if they are here to testify. So this is different than the bill I signed on to. I would appreciate the chance to do that if they're here.
Mr. Evans is coming down right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Evans, welcome once again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
May I give him a starting point anyhow? Mr. Evans, I know that this place has given you a mandate, and I know when this project has morphed a couple times since the legislature dreamed it up and had it happen up there. And in trying to fix some of these things, I guess, that are just here, it is what it is. I know these good cities needed to replace their district heat anyhow, and here it was. So we worked that all out. All of a sudden, we've gone from a mechanism that I thought we were going to put into play, which says when times are tough and costs are up, you got a mechanism to do a fuel cost adjustment. We do that all the time with coal or whatever, the natural gas. But I also assume that when times got good again and wood waste came down, or if all of a sudden the market for coal dries up and they get a great coal contract or something, we could go the other way with this too. But 18 years at $104 or whatever the number is in this now is really making me choke. Why? Why would you take this out of the realm of having a flexible contract that can float versus a fixed cost? And you know darn well in a couple years we're going to be back here again in front of the legislature fixing this thing. But Mr. Chairman, I've got to stop talking and let the guy respond, I guess. There is a question in there. What the hey? That's the question. So.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, my name is Rick Evans. I'm with Xcel Energy. I was afraid you were going to ask me that, and I will tell you as much as I can. Okay. It's very complicated, and I don't completely, I can't give it to you chapter and verse, but I will tell you what I know. At some point in the early 2000s, accounting procedures were adopted with respect to these kinds of power plants. My understanding is that in a circumstance where we are paying higher than market price for energy and where the price is allowed to fluctuate, the financial, whoever sets these standards, will impose this contract on us as a capital lease. It essentially looks at it and says this plant has no value at the end of its useful life because it produces higher than market price energy. And if a utility is purchasing it at a floating rate, then the assumption is that we are essentially buying the plant. The result of that is it puts debt on our balance sheet, which drives up our cost of borrowing money and our cost of capital. And so when this bill was first brought to me and I took it to our financial people, they said, well, this creates a capital lease. This will be harmful to our financial position and our ability, essentially the price of borrowing money. The concern was that the increase in our price of borrowing money would be a greater impact on our ability to do business than the higher prices of energy. And so that was the reason for the change in the bill and the reason for leaving the fuel clause adjustment. Let me just say that our other two biomass contracts do have fuel clause adjustments. Our district energy contract existed prior to this change and was grandfathered in, is what I understand. And the Fibromin project, because the price of fuel is a smaller part of their overall, if I had my accounting folks here, they would tell you why it makes a difference, but it makes a difference in how this, on whether or not this contract is deemed a capital lease for Xcel Energy.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, believe it or not, I kind of understood what he was saying.
I kind of did, too.
And whenever you hear me get in committee and start railing about things that we make up around here that the marketplace is not asking for, we sit around here and dream this stuff up and then afflict the ratepayers with it. It's why I sound like I'm crabby. Maybe I don't sound like I'm crabby, but I am inside. I'm really crabby about this stuff because we're not doing the most efficient and productive thing for our citizens and our ratepayers. Now, I know we have another altruistic view that we argue about when we're trying to burn the trees and certain kinds of trees and all this stuff. But this is why some of us get pretty cranky about the things we make them do. And Xcel Energy, I won't say you don't care, because I know Mr. Evans cares very much about this, but they're rate of return regulated people. All they have to do is gobble it up, mark it up, and pass it into the ratepayers. And at the end of the day, that's not protecting enough for the people that buy this stuff. I mean, if the good people of Shakopee buy 90 megawatts of this power, whether it's through our municipal or the industrial park, which is customers of Mr. Evans' company. And I watched one of our big printing plants this summer really struggling with some unexpected, unanticipated costs that were added on through the Muni because they lost the big contract. Somewhat because of our doing, but not entirely, so I won't go into that. But just so you know, there's a method behind why I speak so strenuously against this and why some of us around here do. It's because of things exactly like this. Now, but enough said right now. I got to think about this because my name's on the bill. I'm fond of this project, and you know, I helped rescue it a couple years ago. Original bill I signed on, I thought, had the mechanism that would allow it to float with the economy and with fuel costs, and now this has changed, and I'm thinking about the shingle plant, the glass plant, the boxboard plant, the printing plant, and all the people in Shakopee that really depend on reliable, quality, low-cost, dependable power from these guys. And I know it's a small part of the mix, but a little here, a little there, and pretty soon we got a real mess on our hands. So thanks for letting me vent a minute, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, I
have to say that I've always admired the way in which you could be cranky in such a pleasant, reasoned way. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard, as a co-author on the bill, I appreciate that, and these negotiations are just wrapping up here. I'm happy. I believe this bill will be laid over, and happy to discuss this further with you as this goes along in the process. And appreciate your concern on that, and I hear your concern.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if I could just clarify one thing.
Certainly, Mr. Evans. Go ahead.
Thank you. To Representative Beard and the members of the committee, the energy that we buy through a power purchase agreement is passed on directly through to our customers, as you mentioned, but we do not mark that energy up. That is passed through at straight cost. So there's not a markup on that energy we purchase, whether it's wind or biomass or any other.
Thank you. Representative Western, did you recall what it was?
Sure, I did, Mike. Representative Beard eloquently brought out my memory. It does deal with a fuel adjustment clause issue, and Mr. Revens probably can augment the response from the witness. What for either of you, what is the incentive to find cheap fuel, and what happens in 5 years, diesel goes back up to $4 a gallon, wood doubles in cost because building starts again? What happens then? Are you going to eat the cost then, or are you going to be back here? And the flip, if prices keep going down, are you going to come back and lower the price of the contract, or do you just get to make the profit on the one end and come back to the legislature and get us to raise it if the fuel costs go higher yet? Ultimately, what is the incentive to keeping your fuel costs down?
Representative Westrom, is that directed to Mr. Leone?
It's to both of them. Both of them, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Evans?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, I think for this particular contract, they have a tremendous incentive to keep their costs down, because unlike the other two biomass projects, they're not going to get a floating rate. They're going to be at a fixed cost. Now, if their fuel cost went way down, I can see where that would be a different issue. But frankly, what this bill calls for is a renegotiated price. It doesn't actually fix the price. We're to sit down with them and renegotiate a price under a time schedule, and then the PUC would have to approve that price, again, under a time schedule. And that price will be fixed in contract, and so I think this particular project has a tremendous incentive to try to make sure their fuel prices stay down. I suppose they can always come back here in a year or two or three and say, gee, it didn't work out, but I imagine a lot of you folks will still be sitting here then, and you'll wonder what's up. So for this particular project, I would expect they have a pretty strong incentive to keep their price down.
Mr. Chair, Representative, just to piggyback on it, Mr. Evans has hit it right on the head. Virginia, population 9,000, giving population 18,000, 27,000 ratepayers. Through the first 2 years of the project, we have subsidized the biomass project by almost $10 million. That's what it's cost us out of our own reserve funds to keep this project afloat. We've got $90 million invested in this, and we're getting to a critical point where the two utilities can no longer support this. We view this mechanism as one getting us through the current high prices that there are for fuel out there, trying to sustain the logging infrastructure that's out there. But more importantly, any dollars that we're generating as what would be viewed as profit is plowed right back into our district heating system to keep them viable and to keep them producing throughout not just the next 18 years of this PPA, but into the long term, because again, it is the survival of our district heating system which is the primary goal of this the renewable energy mandate.
Mr. Chair, if I understood you correctly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, one of you, either of you, now you're saying that the 104 rate is a fixed rate, but you may enter into renegotiation, new negotiations 2 years down the road if prices go up or down? Is that correct?
Representative Western, while the testifiers are looking at the bill, my reading of the bill is that the 104 is a ceiling. It's not a floor. It's not a fixed rate. It's a ceiling beyond which negotiated price cannot exceed that.
Okay.
I think I'm reading that correctly.
I'll look at it again too. Sure. I just thought I heard that out of what they said, but that would be consistent with what I'm understanding them saying.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Evans,
what the bill provides is that upon request of the project owner, the utility shall agree to amend its power purchase agreement, and it gives us 45 days to negotiate a new power purchase agreement. The cap on what the bill says is that the price we negotiate cannot exceed $104 by more than 5%. Currently, statute says that the price is $104, and so what this says is you can go back and renegotiate that price, but you can't exceed the current price by more than 5%. And then once we negotiate that contract, the utility would be required to submit it to the Public Utilities Commission, as we do all of our power purchase agreements, for their deliberation and approval. And I believe it gives them 90 days to complete that process.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Evans, to put that just in terms that most people are familiar with, 104 and 5% of that would be roughly figuring 5 cents or five digits, which would put it up to 109. If you convert that to a kilowatt price, am I doing the math right? Is it potentially up to 10.9 cents a kilowatt? Is that
10.92
to be precise? Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Members, we do have four other bills on the agenda, and we have, according to our scheduled time, 20 minutes with which to deal with those. Since we started more than a half hour late, I think we can expect to run until 4:30, but that's still pushing it. Representative Kalin?
Mr. Chair, I can pass.
There's no further discussion at this time. The bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus energy policy bill.
Mr. Chair, will we be done by 6 o'clock? We have an engagement tonight. I'm trying to help you out.
We'll try, Representative Poppy. Let me sort through things here.
Representative Pilkey, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I can give you a brief overview of both of the bills that we will be discussing this afternoon deal with studies. House Bill 862 asks for an annual transmission report to the legislature. Basically, let me say, both of these bills have come to us. They were drafted in the Senate. They have come to me asking that I be the House author of these bills. I agreed to do that. Quite frankly, I think that House File 862 is asking for something that is already done. Members have in the packet a copy of the statute dealing with transmission studies. And I have to say that I think that that is probably adequate for the purposes that this bill encompasses. So really what I'm asking to do here is to move this bill forward so that I can have the discussion with the Senate.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
your motion then, Representative Hilty, is to do what with the bill?
I'm sorry, Representative Magnus, I think I neglected to make a motion regarding the bill. It would be that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill.
Further questions to House Bill 862?
Mr. Chair, in that regard, we did not really have time once we sort of had the discussion about the general policy regarding the study bills to draft an amendment to this bill, but before it would be included in the policy bill, I propose to change the language somewhat to actually refer it to the study that's already in statute.
Any members from the audience wish to comment? Oh, Representative Hilty renews his motion that House File 862 be laid over. House File 862 is laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next bill would be Senate File 656. Members, this is a bill also calling for a study, this one to the Legislative Energy Commission. This bill has already passed the Senate, and I believe you have in your packet a fiscal note on the bill. And I'll be quite candid. My feeling, and I think I have expressed this a number of times to members of this committee, and certainly to the members of this committee who are also members of the Legislative Energy Commission, that what the Legislative Energy Commission needs to do is have a discussion about what it wants to do. It certainly has the power to undertake any studies that it deems necessary without being directed to do so by the legislature, and I frankly do not think that it's a particularly good idea to have this commission be launched by being directed by the legislature to do a number of things before the commission itself has had the opportunity to discuss what it would like to do. So, sort of in the same vein as the other bill before us, I would like to have the opportunity with this bill to have the discussion with the Senate. I do not believe that it's necessary for these kinds of things to go forward, quite frankly. This is a finance bill. It's already passed the Senate. And given that and not knowing what the fate of any of these bills ultimately will be, Mr. Chair, I would simply move that this bill be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Representative Hilty moves that Senate File 656 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Do you have additional testimony lined up, Representative Hilty? Anyone from the audience wish to speak for or against? Representative Zornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question, Representative Hilty. After finance, what's the next stop then if it continues to move?
Mr. Chair, Representative Norris, I believe it would also be referred to Committee on Ways and Means and then to the House for it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair,
Representative Norris.
I'm just concerned that others down the road may not be looking at it like you do. I agree with your position don't see a real need for, you know, kind of taking our time up to vote on this at some point, but we may not have. We'll see what happens on that. But I happen to have a plasma TV, and I know that they use a lot more energy, but I bought it because I like it, you know. So, editorial comment, very brief. It was also on sale, I should add that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norris, I mean to be pretty steadfast in maintaining the position that I take on this bill, and also I hope that you have your plasma TV plugged into an energy source that you can turn off entirely when you're not using it. I suspect it doesn't get a whole lot of use during the week these days.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, what's the net effect of this bill? Is this basically to come back with a study to us as to what to regulate for appliances or more? Give me a little more insight or background.
Representative Westrom, should this bill prevail, it simply asks for the Legislative Energy Commission to do a study to analyze whether we should adopt standards, energy standards for appliances that are not currently covered by the Energy Star provision. It doesn't mandate anything except the study.
Representative Westrom.
Representative Hilty, where did this bill come out of? Did you just come up with it on your drive-in from Moose Lake, or how did you get to be the author? some groups behind this. What kind of interests are? Who's pushing it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Weston, as I explained in my introductory remarks about both of these bills, these were drafted and came to from the Senate. This was not my initiative, and I think I've made pretty clear my feeling about these bills in general.
Further discussion? Anyone from the audience wish to testify? Representative Hilty, would you like to renew your motion?
I would, Mr. Chair, that Senate File 656 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Division.
Division has been requested. Ayes, raise your hands first. Okay. I believe there are 10 ayes. The bill does pass on to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Purcell, House File 1725.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Mr. Chair, I had intended to have both House File 1725 and 26 heard today. My understanding that these bills were heard in the Senate and that House File 1726 was tabled, and I think in the interest of time here, and I just want to say a few words. I guess that if I might move 1725, if you'd allow me to do that, and for possible inclusion.
Certainly. Representative Purcell. Representative Purcell moves House File 1725 to possible inclusion in the Energy Policy Omnibus Bill. And Representative Purcell, I believe you have an amendment.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. let's see, line 1.7, I'd like to offer the oral amendment to change the 50,000 to 150,000. Right, and the reason for that is just so we aren't causing undue hardship on any very small delivery companies here with regard to keeping track of records.
Everyone want to understand that amendment? All those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Purcell, to your bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair, just a brief overview, and then I do have Ms. Pam Marshall with me here to help answer questions. And these bills are brought forward in the best interest of low-income heating assistance, and my interest in this is to try and ensure that not only are we keeping heat in people's homes that need help having heat in their homes in the winter, but that we also are, as all of us are taxpayers, and that we're getting what we intended to get out of the heating assistance that we provide, and so that need is brought out that we need more information, and in order to make some decisions. And as you can see, there's 1725 House File 1725 is designed to collect information that will aid our decision making. At this time, it's fairly much anecdotal information that is brought to us. And under House File 1725, we would companies delivering heating assistance fuels, propane and fuel oil companies, would those delivering more than 150,000 annually would be required to keep track of the list of that you see there, 1.11 and then on down through the bill. I guess with that, I would ask for questions, or if Ms. Marshall has some further comments, I'd welcome them.
Let's go to Ms. Marshall first, unless there's something right now. Ms. Marshall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'm Pam Marshall. I'm the director of the Energy Sense Coalition. House File 1725, I think, simply asks for a minimal amount of disclosure from companies who provide an essential service. Information like that required from these reports can help us understand if customers are maintaining access to their heating source, and it can also inform subsequent potential public policies to ensure that they can do so if they aren't. The bill is limited to those fuel oil and propane vendors that receive the most amount of money from the energy assistance program, and that's where the $150,000 benchmark comes from. To put this in a little perspective, there are over 850 vendors throughout the state of Minnesota, rural electric cooperatives, municipal utilities, connected utilities, delivered fuel vendors, who receive an amount of energy assistance on behalf of their income-eligible customers. Only 60 of those 850 vendors statewide receive more than that $150,000 threshold, but half of those are delivered fuel vendors. So it's a very, in terms of the number of customers, it's a large segment of that industry, but in terms of the overall number that receive that level of funding from the Energy Assistance Program, is relatively small. Information like that requested in this bill, I believe, is important to understand whether LIHEAP customers, the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP customers are offered payment terms that ensure that their grants are used most effectively. For example, if customers receiving energy assistance are less likely to be on some form of budget plan or keep fill arrangement, seems to me we need to know why they are less likely, if they are less likely, and particularly when those are the very customers that may benefit the most from those types of arrangements. It's also important to note that the energy assistance program is available because we need to lower the percentage of income that households devote to their energy costs. And if some amount of those funds are used for non-fuel related costs, minimal service delivery fees, and additional service charges, we need to know that, and we need to know the extent to which that is true so that we can guarantee that those funds are used for primarily for their intended purpose, which is to help pay a portion of the heating fuel costs, which, given the prices recently and the erosion of the purchasing power of an energy assistance grant, is even more important. This bill did pass the Senate last week, and I'm hoping it can do the same here today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
That's Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, to Mr. Representative Purcell, can we get this information already from the Department of Commerce?
Ms. Marshall?
Mr. Chair and Representative, we do know some things about the delivered fuel customers. For example, we know about 30% of the overall energy assistance population statewide heats with either propane or fuel oil. We do know the amount of money that goes to the industry in the form of LIHEAP payments in aggregate and by vendor. What we don't know is many of the things that we're asking for in this bill. In other words, we do not know the breakdown between fuel and non-fuel charges currently. We don't know how many of their customers on Keepville versus their residential customers generally. We don't know the extent to which there are refusals to deliver. These are all things that are outside an application for the energy assistance program, so our knowledge is very limited and very general, and this bill asks for what are some of these service practices that we don't know about and additional charges.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could the Department of Commerce comment on this bill for us?
Senator Anderson, I think we do have a couple of people from the Department of Commerce here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Bill Glahn, Director of the Office of Energy Security and a Deputy Commissioner in the Department of Commerce. And I have with me this afternoon John Harvanko. He is the Director of the State's Energy Assistance, the Office of Energy Assistance.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative, to the bill, I would say as far as the bill itself is concerned, that the department does not have a position on the bill. We do collect some amount of information from fuel vendors, and if it pleases the committee, I could have Mr. Harvanko describe what is collected and perhaps illuminate what is not collected, but maybe we should proceed with that. Unless
I think that is the nature of the question, so Mr. Harvanko, if you could enlighten us.
Mr. Chair, I'm John Harvanko, the State Energy Assistance Director. We collect just a few of those items at the Department of Commerce. We do an annual survey of heating delivered fuel vendors during the heating season on their prices each week. And we have most of the information about those receiving LIHEAP assistance as the state administrator of the program, but we do not collect information regarding bill payment plans or fees at the state level.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harvanko, is it possible to get that information readily now, if asked this, we're asking, how is it going to cost us extra FTE or extra people to put on in the department?
Chair Ivanko?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we would have to collect that in some manner.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Ivanko, you're saying we're going to have to put in more people to do this?
Chair Ivanko?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we would need to create some sort of survey and ask those energy vendors throughout the state. As Ms. Marshall said, we have over 800 of those throughout the state. So it would be a collection process that we'd have to do.
Ms. Marshall, did you want to comment?
Mr. Chair, I think it is important to note, as I said earlier, that only about 30 vendors actually fit the criteria of receiving more than $150,000 each year from the Energy Assistance Program. So while it is true that we don't collect all of this information at this time, and what we do collect is limited not only by the type of information we want, but this bill also asks the vendors to report this information for both those customers that receive energy assistance and those who don't, because one of the issues out there is the fact that LIHEAP only assists 30% of the income eligible population. We think some of these issues are also being experienced by a larger population, but we don't know anything about those customers because they're in no way tied into energy assistance. At the same time, again, this is limited to about 30 vendors throughout the state.
And Director Guan, you had a comment as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I take it that since you have contact with these, Mr. Harvanko, that you have a contract with each of the vendors throughout the state, and if you had the extra funds and resources to do this, you could collect the information?
Chair Harvanko.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have contact with those energy vendors that serve low-income households through the Energy Assistance Program. That may not be all energy-delivered fuel vendors.
Mr. Chair, is there a fiscal note for this?
Representative Anderson.
Is there a fiscal note for this bill?
There is not at this time.
Representative Anderson, the bill does not ask the department to do anything. It asks for the vendors to report. But as it was drafted, there wasn't an apparent need for a fiscal note.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's not what I just heard from Mr. Harvanko or Mr. Guan, is that we'd have to put on some extra people to collect this information that is not available at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Mr.
Chair,
Director Guan. This was a comment I was going to make a moment ago. I think it would add some de minimis amount of cost to our department. I don't think we would have to add an FTE. I think we could accomplish. I'm not supporting the bill, not opposing the bill. I think we could accomplish the bill's objectives with our current staff. Modest amount of additional cost. Again, we were mentioned by name in 2.9 and 2.10. We already do track delivered heating fuel prices throughout the year. So through the heating, I'm sorry, my apologies, Mr. Chair, through the heating season.
Correct. Chair, I would concur, and from my reading of this, that we're asking that several, maybe up to 10 or 11 data entry points be added to a spreadsheet here for 30 companies. That's not much. That's not even close to a quarter of an FTE or a tenth of an FTE.
Representative Beers?
Mr. Chair, yes, I have a couple quick questions. Probably for Ms. Marshall first, if I may. On line 1.7, a fuel or propane company received $150,000 or more, so on and so forth. So there's about 800 home heating delivery people in the state. About 30 of them would apply at this level. How do they get this money? How do they become qualified to do all this reporting? Is it because they ask for the money to help, or is it because people who buy from them pay with LIHEAP dollars?
Ms. Marshall?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, it's a blend of the answer you just gave. The vendors enter a vendor agreement with the State Energy Assistance Program. Then when their customers apply for energy assistance, the state Energy Assistance Program provides those federally funded Energy Assistance Program dollars to those participating vendors directly on behalf of their income-eligible customers that apply and are approved to receive energy assistance.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. That's good for us to know. So I'm assuming then that companies can opt out and not participate in this if they wish. Would that be accurate?
Mr. Marshall.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, it is always, independent of this bill or not, it is always up to a vendor's discretion whether or not they choose to sign a vendor agreement with the Energy Assistance Program.
Thank you. That's very helpful for us to be clear on that. Last thing I'm looking at is I'm looking at all these things that we're asking vendors to do. First of all, it strikes me as proprietary information that if I owned one of these companies, I may be loath to pass that along unless there's extreme confidentiality with the, what do we call it now, the Office of Energy Security. And I know, Mr. Chair, that I think there may be a testifier or two from the industry that want to talk about it. You don't have to answer that, but when testifiers come forward, if they could talk about whether they're concerned about that, I'm interested in knowing that. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I
Marshall.
Could respond to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Beard. You know, as somebody who works directly also with low and fixed income people, I'm not, you know, insensitive to the data privacy issues, but in this bill, we are asking for numbers of customers affected by each of these payment arrangements or the extent to which their energy assistance grants are paying for non-fuel related charges. We are not asking for information on individual customers.
Well, yeah. Understood, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at things that, Representative Jackson Kulik, this is what Grandpa Louie's business was. So I feel like I'm channeling a question from Grandpa Louie here, members. But the price per gallon, non-related fuels paid, fees paid, and a routine price list for routine service. So those are all things that if I was in the business, I'd love to know what my competitors are up to there. I'm just wondering if that actually is a concern from other folks who actually are on the business. Well, I'm sure we'll hear about that in a moment. But thank you.
Another Purcell? I would just offer to you, Representative Baird, that if CBI is something we need to address, I'd be happy to work with you on this and work with Commerce.
Representative Norman, do you have a question?
Just a real quick one, Mr. Chair. I guess I was looking at the list of things that are asked. I guess my question is, what happens as a result of the collection of this information? Anything?
Marshall?
I guess I'm looking for the purpose.
Ms. Marshall.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we have both the advocates and the industry representatives, various members of the energy committees in both houses have had numerous discussions and attempts to voluntarily try to secure some of the information that we're looking for in this bill. And we've not met with much success. And I think the purpose of the Energy Sense Coalition in asking you to support this bill is that we know very little beyond anecdotal information about whether or not people are able to maintain their heating source if they heat with fuel oil or propane. We know that information if they're heating with natural gas or electricity from an investor-owned utility, a rural electric, or a municipal utility. Because these fuels are the most expensive and they've become inordinately expensive recently, I think it would help us to know to what extent and how people are struggling to pay for these so that we can ensure that if policies are needed to rectify those situations, that we have the information that we need to base those policies on.
Mr. Chair, one last question. Can you tell me where the bill is in the Senate? Has it been heard over there? Is it alive or dead?
Representative Norris, it's included in the Senate policy bill.
Okay, thank you.
If I may add to, and I alluded to it earlier, Representative Norris, that my involvement with the bill is not only to try and ensure that we are adequately take care of the heating for folks that we need to, the need assistance, but also that we're we're paying for fuel. We aren't paying for fees and charges that we taxpayers shouldn't be paying for.
No further discussion at this time. We do have, Representative Thaler, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is more in the way of a comment, but it's something that I really want to bring out, so I'm going to take this little bit of time. But I'm glad that this bill has come forward because I think there is a real problem out there with the LIHEAP customers that are having problems with their bills and with our small vendors. I hear from both sides of it, and I have for a number of years. It's not a new issue. I am very sensitive to the fact that our small vendors, and I'm very glad that you made that differentiation in this bill, the small vendors are not always very able to, absorb these costs, and I recognize that, so I'm glad about this. But I also feel that the propane and fuel oil vendors are sort of set out from some of these discussions. The local electric co-ops, for instance, are very involved with this because of the shutoff rule, but I think that we need to have a broader, more fair discussion that involves all of the folks that are involved with providing fuel or energy heating to people that are on the LIHEAP program. We had a meeting this August with when people were concerned, and rightly so, about the cost of potential rising fuel costs with our local, the social service director, the people that do the CAP weatherization within our community, county commissioner, the local electric cooperative power people. They were all very concerned about this, and one of the issues that was brought up is that the propane and fuel vendors are not seeming to be part of this picture. So I'm hoping that this will move them ahead towards some way of recognizing some responsibility and yet without penalizing the small vendors. So I'm appreciative of this change, and I hope that this will allow this consortium of people to kind of move ahead with these discussions, because it's something that has come up time and again, for me anyway, from people in my district.
Members, it's 4:30. I realize other committees are meeting. This bill is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. We can have further discussion of it at that time, but we have three people that are on the list to testify. I presume all three of them are opposed to the bill. I think that we need to hear from them today. If you have to leave, we understand that, but I intend to go ahead and let them testify. Mr. Box?
Mr. Chairman, in the interest of the committee's time, the list of witnesses has asked me to appear on behalf of all of them and give a brief, for the record, presentation of what our concerns on this bill are, if that's all right with the chairman.
That would be fine, so please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
My name is Court Holton, and I represent the Minnesota Propane Gas Association, which is one of the interested stakeholders. Mr. Chairman, I know witnesses often say that they'll be brief, and they almost never are. I'm saying that I think I can do this in 2 minutes. I'm going to the same event that many of you are.
Local government?
Am I going to look? No. Our concerns on the study are, I think I can do it in four. One, we have been at the table, and I always bristle when we get that allegation. And the last time we were there, we all agreed to do a survey, which we did, which you can do voluntarily. You get so much more latitude. We've completed that survey, and the results were given back to the legislators involved. Secondly, this particular list of questions being put in law seeks a great deal of proprietary information. Let me just give you one example. Let's say you're an outsider, you're not even in the system yet, and you've got Holton Fuel Company out there, and you kind of like to have them. So now you have my business profile within this information. You've got my business plan, and you see that I went about 80% of my accounts into pre-buy, and instead of the price going up, the price fell in half. And you know that I'm in deep, deep trouble, and now is your time to come in and pluck that low-hanging fruit, and I'm out of the business. So there is proprietary information assets. We don't know what purpose this rigid study would serve. If you want to find out if there's a problem out there or not, maybe a not something like this, but a study, maybe you should ask the department. I don't want to give you more work to do, but is there a problem out there? Because they have flexibility. You're going to get this information back, and you're going to find out that we didn't quite ask all the right questions, and some of the questions that we asked aren't really that informative, but you can't do anything about it because it's in a law that you passed. It's not an assignment that you gave to somebody. The feds have the ability to audit this to see if their money, and it's their money, is being effectively spent. And I believe in the LIHEAP contracts, the state has the money, the authority to do the same and get this information, but it won't be all lined up company by company. And if we're going to do it that way, I think this needs a data privacy classification. It needs to be classified as private. Otherwise, the proprietary information, every one of these companies is going to be hanging out there for competitive purposes, for people in the industry and for other entities that are not in the industry yet but might want to be there. I guess I've reached my 2 minutes.
Thank you. Representative Western, it's going to be brief. We do have another committee that's supposed to be meeting in here now, and they're standing at the door.
The fish can wait, Mr. Chair.
I take it you don't have any bills up before the game of fish.
I didn't think about that before I said that, Mr. Chair. Well, I think there's a lot more we'd like to discuss on this, Mr. Chairman, and so I think we need to carve out some time when it comes back with whatever bill it might be attaching itself to. But to the witness, and I guess it's the former, to Ms. Marshall as well, but I think Representative Nornes asked the question that kind of hit the nail on the head. What are you going to do with this information? I mean, it looks like we're on a fishing expedition here, and then we're going to try to decide what kind of public policies we can come up with. In the end, it's going to cost the business owner free time and money to put together this information, and the state's going to ultimately come up with more mandates, regulations, or programs that will cost the taxpayer more money. Is there any win-win in this for the propane dealers, or... And obviously, I'm thinking not, because I wouldn't be getting the calls I got now this morning and last week from some of my propane dealers. Can you respond to that, Mr. Holtz?
Representative, first off,
Representative Westrum, just so your understanding of where I'm coming from, I'm going to say it again. I think the win-win is that we've got propane and fuel dealers that are getting millions of dollars of taxpayer funds, and so there's a pretty big win there in that side of the equation. And the other side of the equation I'm very interested in is that really delivering fuel? And I really want to know that. I think it's important for us to know that. So that's just kind of a nutshell of where I'm at with it. I think the collection effort associated with this is quite minimal. I can't imagine. I've got business folks in my family, and this wouldn't be much at all.
Mr. Holton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One has to keep in mind that there's a mistaken notion. This money that we're talking about, these federal dollars, they do not go to the company that's delivering the fuel. Those are grants to the individuals to whom have met the LIHEAP criteria. They get this grant. We are the bookkeepers for this money, and we use it when they order,
And if there's leftover at the end, we write out a check to that customer. So it is not our money. We only are the accountants of this money. In terms of the win-win, if it seems that we're, and we're not on my 2 minutes anymore, Mr. Chairman.
Correct.
We seem to be seeking a problem here. Or is there a problem? And we did, with that survey, but the information that we got back was, while poor people struggle, and they struggle in every walk of their life, whether it's power, clothes, medicine, insurance, extracurricular activities, I'm not denying that. But we didn't find the horror stories and the problems that, that often support this effort, which has been going on for 4 years. This year we even talked to the LIHEAP people at Commerce, and there isn't a reason to believe that things are so bad that the legislature needs to take significant action to retool the system, which is going to be harder to do because it's a federal system to begin with. And some of this stuff I'm not even sure that you could do. But if there was a more flexible approach that didn't put our information in a basket and scare the hell out of us, maybe we can find what the parameters are, and maybe we can find some of the suggestions that we've made over the way this is done. Some of the things where this money is delivered are inefficient. Why do you have to wait, you know, for somebody to run out? Then you have to check their system then before you can fill it up again. That costs $100. That's wasted money. Why do you have to have a refusal before you qualify in some instances for the extra money? I mean, there are things that can be done, but under this, it would not be a win-win to answer your question. Sorry it took so long.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just a parting comment.
Representative West,
we
that's what it's going to be, because when you finish your comment, we're going to adjourn.
All right. We aren't dealing with a regulated industry here that's got a guaranteed return of profit. They'll just go to the other customers and raise their rates guaranteed because they've got a captive audience. Representative Purcell, I think there's more trouble with this bill than just being a minimal nuisance to small business owners, which I think you can only pile so many minimal nuisances on, and you frustrate business owners as well. And we don't have enough time to talk about that. But thank you.
Thank you, Representative Westrom. Before we adjourn, I just want to mention that both the policy bill and the finance bill will be up before this committee on Thursday evening, and Mr. Pomeroy should be able to make those available to members sometime tomorrow. And with that, the meeting is adjourned.